Radio is supported by Boston Scientific SciMed, based in Minnesota since 1971. 3,000 employees dedicated to creating innovative technologies to treat heart disease. Good morning. Welcome to Mid-Morning. I'm Catherine Lanfer. Data collected for the first time by the St. Paul Police Department shows that a black person is more likely to be stopped by police than a white person. News that once again highlights the growing local and national concern over racial profiling by police. In a news conference earlier this week, Chief William Finney says he doesn't believe his department is racist. The chief noted that many of the stops occurred in neighborhoods where more minorities are residents. Well, the St. Paul numbers are being called the first hard data. There are a lot of proposals floating around about how to combat racial profiling. We're going to be talking today to the author of one of those proposals, Rich Stanek, a Republican state representative from Maple Grove and also a Minneapolis police captain. He joins us here in the studio. Thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Catherine.
And we'll also be talking to Chief William Finney of the St. Paul Police Department. He's also here in the studio. Thanks for coming by.
Oh, thank you, Catherine.
Well, let's first of all start talking about those numbers from St. Paul. They've been called the first hard data. What conclusions can we draw from that data?
Well, Catherine, I think it's important that we first of all correct the inaccuracy that's out there. The paper, the Pioneer Press in particular, said that blacks are more likely to be stopped than whites. Our data said that of our car stops, 56% of those were white, 25.5% were black. Now, I don't know what that means, but it seems to me that that's more whites than blacks. So I think we need to correct that. Now, if we're talking about in percentage-wise, if blacks are being stopped more in terms of their percentage, true, but that requires a longer explanation. But I think if we're going to talk about this issue, we have to do it with accuracy, we have to do it with candor, and we have to be willing to make changes when it's something that's glaring that does a disservice to our citizens. So I come to the table saying, let's not have the hysteria and the hype. Let's talk about a very, very real issue about racial disparity in the criminal justice system in Minnesota, and let's work as good Minnesotans to resolve that.
If there is a disparity, why is it inaccurate to look at those numbers and say, look, blacks make up 7% of the population, but they accounted for 29% of those traffic stops?
Yes, and then let me correct further.
Okay.
The Pioneer Press dismissed 22% of our car stops, saying that they were traffic accidents. When they misunderstood the data, it wasn't traffic accidents. That was the traffic and accident radar squads that made those stops. So, I mean, here again, it's how you skew and interpret the information and send it forward. Clearly, we stop a higher percentage of blacks in terms of the population. Clearly,
okay.
We do.
All right. I guess that's what I was trying. It sounds like what you're saying is, yes, it's true, you're more likely to be stopped if you're black, but we don't know enough about the data yet to really say more than that?
Well, I don't like those terms.
What terms do you like?
In St. Paul, car stops occur most often against white people. Now, that's the truth. Now, we do stop a high number of blacks, but you have to take a look where those car stops are happening. We have areas of the city of St. Paul that we get our highest number of calls. Southern University, Frogtown, Downtown, and Payne Arcade. Those areas are where we get all of our main calls to the police, our highest number of what we call Part 1 offenses, murder, rape, robberies, etc. Those are things we report to the police. That's what happens in those areas. The highest number of car accidents happen in those areas. So quite likely, you're going to have the highest number of law enforcement there going on those areas. And so in Frogtown, Summit U, there's a larger percentage of blacks that are stopped, but there's still at least a 30% stoppers ratio of whites. When you get over to Payne Arcade, it just turns the opposite. More whites are stopped than African Americans and people of color. So we have to look at who lives in the community, where those car stops are happening, etc. The real glaring thing is that men of color are asked to be searched and searched at twice the rate of white men. And so that is something that I think we can, now we are made notice on that, is something we can begin to address.
Rich Stanek, I'd like to have your reaction. I'm assuming that you have looked at some of the coverage of these numbers.
I've looked at the information that St. Paul Police released, and I'd concur with the chief that, you know, the majority of traffic law enforcement stops were made of white people. But he's nailed it on the head. I mean, the problem is minorities are being searched and or maybe arrested or cited at a greater rate than the proportion of which they were stopped. And that's the issue. And I mean, that's identified now. It's just a snapshot of what's going on in this state. But it's something we need to take a look at.
Now, we're waiting for some numbers from Minneapolis as well, I understand.
Yeah, Minneapolis did a six-month study. They have not released the numbers, the data collection that they collected.
Now, my understanding is that Chief Finney, that Minneapolis is waiting to do more analysis before they release those numbers. Tell me, do you wish you had waited longer and maybe had someone else do an analysis before you release them?
Well, you know, hindsight's always wonderful. You know, the St. Paul Police Department simply feels we have nothing to hide. We respond to the media very well. The media says, we want your raw data, we want it now. And we said, okay, here it is. Now, in hindsight, I should have waited till we had a chance to analyze it ourselves and take a look at it. One of the things that did come up was in terms of who gets ticketed in St. Paul. Whites are more likely to get cited than people of color in St. Paul. You take a look at those numbers, and it's a higher percentage. Whites, 56% of the car stops, 70% of the citations, 70% of them gets tagged. African Americans, 25.5% of the car stops, 24% of citations. So it's less than their numbers of being stopped. And we have anecdotal reasons why that may occur. Maybe it's because they are being asked to be searched, and if they find nothing, officers find nothing, feel like, well, to give you the tag is an added burden on that. Is it right? I don't think so. Can we correct some of that? I think we should come and talk about it and probably do correct that.
Representative Stanek, could you talk for a minute about the bill you're offering?
Yeah, the legislation I'm offering comes out of recommendations of a work group made up of the law enforcement community, prosecutors, public defenders, representatives of the minority community, and citizens in general. I asked for them to get together over the interim, the summer, give me some recommendations for racial profiling legislation, which I plan to introduce. I simply look at it. I took the recommendations of the work group. I think there were eight of them that came out of it. I took all eight recommendations and put them into legislation, and I want the legislature to debate it as a public policy.
Bottom line, what does your legislation propose?
My legislation proposes training for peace officers, proposes a mandatory policy for law enforcement agencies, like an anti-racial profiling policy, that they shall not discriminate.
And do you define racial profiling?
Yes, we do.
That's an invitation.
Racial profiling would be defined as any stop, any traffic stop, that relies on the race, the ethnicity, or national origin of a driver as a reason for the stop.
All right. And how do you... Okay, so you said that there's training, you want to have it as a written policy. How effective is it to have a policy that says we shouldn't do this?
Well, policy is a clear statement on behalf of the law enforcement agency for the citizens it serves that profiling, racial profiling, is not tolerated. And there are consequences if you violate that policy, whether departmental sanctions or state licensing sanctions, even criminal. I mean, it's a federal violation of federal law if you discriminate against somebody based on your race or ethnicity, religion.
And would you require data collection, such as what's happened in St. Paul, what's going on now in Minneapolis?
Absolutely. I would have data collection. I would set up a structure across the state. I would not mandate it. I would do it through grants back to local law enforcement agencies to encourage them to collect that data and then set up a structure.
I'm confused. You said you'd require the collection of data, but now you've just said that you would sort of urge them by giving them grants. What's the distinction? The
distinction is mandated versus non-mandated data collection. I'm not in favor of forcing the St. Paul Police Department to collect data, or the Minneapolis Police Department, or Wilmer Police Department. They're already collecting the data. We've seen some of the problems we've had by not having a structure in place to analyze the data. That's what the state of Minnesota could provide through this policy.
Chief Finney?
You know, it's important to understand, why are we doing this? How do we get from where we were to where we are today? And back in 1991, the Minnesota Supreme Court Racial Bias Task Force found in their deliberations that there was a racial bias in the criminal justice system in the courts. Later on, we found out in corrections, that it really, if you're a black person, you're 23 more times more likely to be sentenced to incarceration than a white person. Now, that's not the highest incarceration rates for blacks in the nation. But what becomes glaring in that is that Minnesota has the absolute lowest incarceration rate for whites anywhere in the nation. So when we have those two things, it begins to say, well, what's happening? Well, the courts point to the police and say that the reason we have all these people in our criminal justice is because you, cops, are making all those arrests of people of color. And so then it then becomes important for us to gather the data to take a look at what's happening on the entry level. How do we get these people? How do all these folks get put into the criminal justice system? Are cops, in fact, targeting? It's a reasonable question, and it's something that we shouldn't be afraid to look at the data. But Minnesotans of goodwill and seeing a disparity simply seem to want to avoid the discussion about racial disparities in the state.
Here we are having this discussion right now. I want to go back to something that's confusing me, which is that, I mean, here you are. You're a leader of this discussion. You're someone who has pushed for collection of this data. You're part of organizations. You've been part of public hearings. And when this data comes out and many of us look at it and say, ah, looks like if you are a black person, it is far more likely that you're going to get stopped than if you are a white person. Even though more white people are stopped than blacks, if it's more likely. Here's the part where I get confused. When then we look at that data and say, but this doesn't mean that racial profiling is going on in St. Paul. This doesn't mean that there is discrimination. When, you know, how could the police officers avoid perpetrating discrimination when all of us as a culture do it?
Well, you know, that's an interesting discussion. That really takes us down the pike. But I think
that, well, let me go back then, because what I'm hearing is you're such a leader in this, and then the data comes out, and what I'm hearing is, but not at my shop.
Oh. No, I sincerely believe that these are not racist actions. I had some police officers I had to redirect, refocus, and in fact reassign, because what appeared to me was what they were doing was indefensible. And so I've addressed that. But in terms of my general police officers, I truly, as a black native St. Paulite, as a lifelong Minnesotan, I do not believe they are practicing racism. Now, we respond as police officers to calls for service. Sometimes the callers have racist agendas. I got three black guys standing on the corner. I know what they're doing. Come out here. I think they're going to rob or rape somebody. So the police come out. We talk to those individuals, and they think that the police are focusing on them when somebody in the house that we make anonymous has called the police on them. Okay, we stop them. We talk to them. Occasionally they get frisked, and then they get sent on their way. Is there something we should be doing differently? Should we be having a discussion about what happens in racial situation? Is there room for improvement in police departments and in the populace of Minnesota for better racial relations? Absolutely. Police officers are products of this community.
Rich Stanek, it strikes me that there is more discussion going to happen this session on racial profiling than has happened before. What accounts for that?
Well, I think what accounts for it is that you've seen a national trend. I mean, this discussion has been on the national front. It's been in Minnesota. People like Chief Finney, leaders in law enforcement, have brought this discussion to the table. Law enforcement could simply step back and say, we don't want to deal with it. They haven't done that. Again, leaders like Chief Finney and Chief Olson, others have stepped up and said, hey, we understand that there's a perception out there that racial profiling occurs by law enforcement of its citizens, whether real or perceived. And whether real or perceived, we need to deal with it, and we're going to do that.
We are talking to Rich Stanek. He's a Republican state representative from Maple Grove. He's also a Minneapolis police captain. He'll be offering legislation this session on racial profiling, ways to prevent it. We're also talking to Chief William Finney. He's head of the St. Paul Police Department, and, of course, they just released the first hard data that we've had looking at traffic stops and the treatment of blacks and whites. It's 1-800-242-2828, 1-800-242-2828. If you're in the Twin Cities and you'd like to join this conversation, it's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Chief Finney, I wanted to get a quick reaction from you on the proposal that Representative Stanek is going to be putting forward in the legislature this session.
I compliment Representative Stanek. I think he's doing a wonderful job in bringing forth the legislation. Now, Bill Finney would say, I want it mandated. Now, I would say I want it mandated because I don't want St. Paul Police Departments who have voluntarily decided to collect this data to be singled out for media attention and comparisons when the rest of the departments aren't doing that. It is not just a metropolitan area. A lot of people out state say that that's a metropolitan issue. It doesn't happen out state. Well, if you want to ask Native Americans if there's racial profiling, if you want to ask migrant workers if there's racial profiling out state Minnesota, I think you'd get a different opinion of that. And so I said, let us all talk about, as a group of professional law enforcement, and Minnesota has some of the highest professionals in law enforcement anywhere in the country. We're licensed. We go through a great deal of training. We have very high standards of Minnesota Peace Officer Standards and Training Board, and we are second to none. And I think we're better than most. But yet and still, while we're not perfect, we have room for improvement. And we first have to get a look at the data and say, this is the focus we need to work on.
Representative Stanek, does some of this lead, when we start getting into these discussions about data collection, maybe talking about community-wide discussions about race relations, does that lead people away from police work? Does that somehow alter our definition of what a police officer is?
No, again, Chief Finney laid it out. I mean, he said that the law enforcement community, cops like he and I, are reflective of the community. You know, he grew up in St. Paul, I grew up in Minneapolis. Cops in general wanted to stay away from the issue of racial profiling. They look at it as almost like reverse discrimination, that somehow they're being targeted, somehow their integrity is being questioned. But that's exactly what the chief and I are saying, is that, you know what, law enforcement's integrity is being questioned. It's our job as law enforcement leaders, he as a chief of police, myself as chair of a funding committee in the House that deals with law enforcement, to say, hey, if our integrity is questioned, let's get to the bottom of it. Let's collect the data, analyze the data, take a look at what the data says, and report it back out to the citizens of this state.
We're going to go to Chris in Rochester. Chris, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hi, thanks for taking the call.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to point out that the collecting of this data and discussing it and that type of thing is a positive step, and that I have to caution everybody that the statistics that show that there's a higher ratio of minorities that are stopped doesn't really prove anything. I could throw out statistics that show there's a higher percentage of males in jail. Does that mean that the criminal justice system is biased against males? So I caution drawing conclusions just based on this ratio.
The caller has a good point. I mean, just on the surface, it doesn't mean that there's a bias there.
I know that you're having the Institute of Race and Poverty at the University of Minnesota analyze this data. What do you want them to look at?
I want them to give me an objective assessment. Take a look at our raw data. Tell me what it is you see as a person that's looking at this. I want them to make recommendations, ask for explanations if there's something they don't understand, and then we're going to take that in-house and look for ways to improve our service delivery of St. Paul police officers to make it more equitable.
Yeah, this question is for both of you. You know, if it isn't racial profiling, then what is going on that it's more likely that a black person would get stopped than a white?
The police, the majority of the calls for service, the majority of service are to poor areas. Blacks in Minnesota are disproportionately poor compared to whites. Indians, Latinos, Hispanics are disproportionately poor compared to whites. And so what happens is that those calls happen in those areas. Most of your police departments are configured to respond to calls for services. If you have a high number of calls for service, they're going to be in that area as opposed to an affluent white area. Affluent white areas don't get much police coverage. Okay, so as a result, when those conflicts occur, they happen with people that have low socioeconomic status. When you have those conflicts, the police department gets involved, and there begins the racial disparity. On the surface, it looks like you're arresting more people of color or not. What we do with those people when we come to intervene as a police department, what we do with them is what counts. Do we violate their constitutional rights? Do we treat them with dignity and respect is what's important and what I insist upon in the St. Paul Police Department. So, and I think the short answer to that is yes. But on the surface, here again, we are searching and at a higher level. And I think that if I stop you for a traffic violation, Catherine Lanfer, and you're speeding without any other information of any other crime being committed. I rolled the window down, and I said, may I see your license? And you don't breathe alcohol fumes on me, or I don't smell the smell of marijuana. Then you should just get your ticket. Why should I ask you, can I search your vehicle, when all you did was violate the speed law? You see, and more often that occurs in communities of color, where we make a regular stop, and the officer will say, can I search your vehicle? And most people will call and say, well, sure, I got nothing to hide. And so that occurs. But yet and still, when that person of color asks a friend of theirs who happens to be white, who got stopped for the same thing, he says, I didn't get searched. No, I feel like I've been violated.
Representative Stanek?
I'd agree with the chief that, you know, I mean, law enforcement, again, is reflective of the community, and we answer calls for service. We target our resources, our personnel, to those areas of the city where the crime occurs. And so that leads to a higher number of police officers in those areas, which may lead to a higher number of stops, which may reflect in some of the data that's already been collected. Again, this snapshot of data.
We're going to go to Tom in St. Paul. Tom, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
Sometimes the problem is trying to make the difference between racism and reality. If the amount of traffic stops of minorities is out of whack compared to the racial demographics of an area, but not out of whack to the demographics of the crime being committed, is that reality or racism? Chief, I'll ask you, are you having a problem with Irish gangs or gangs from, well, I don't know, Central European compared to Hispanic or black? What would be your answer?
Our gangs mostly are the communities of color, yes.
Okay. If you're making an effort to stop that, the people who are being hurt most are people in the black community. When we have a crime wave of gang warfare, who pays the price? The blacks. Most of the males, most are males, and most are black. You're actually helping them out by trying to remove those people from the city. But the police force gets criticized for trying to help them out. It doesn't make any sense.
Well, the difficulty in that is this. If I'm a black person and not a gang member, but I happen to look like a gang member because I wear my clothes in a particular fashion or form, and I get treated like a gang member, well, that makes me feel like you're not making the difference between me and that person who is actively a gang member. And the onus is back on the police department as professionals to understand that there's a difference between a black gang member and a black person who's not a gang member. And so that when we do active attacks on gangs that were being acting out, shooting it out with each other, etc., the St. Paul Police Department identifies the gang and the members by name, and then we raise holy heck with them. We go after them by name. Are we profiling? No. We're going after criminal gang members who are disrupting the community and firing bullets indiscriminately around the town. But we have a professional responsibility not to harass or be aggressive with the person who may dress the same that we know not to be a gang member.
Representative Stanek.
Tom, you talked about perception. I'm going to tell you that, you know, to be most effective, law enforcement officers, whether Minneapolis, St. Paul, greater Minnesota, they need to build on the relationships based on respect and trust of their community members, and that the real or perceived practice of racial profiling erodes that trust and damages those relationships. So again, you know, I compliment Chief Finney, Chief Olson, other Minnesota law enforcement chiefs and sheriffs who are going to step out, collect data.
We're talking to Rich Stanek. He's a Republican state representative from Maple Grove and a Minneapolis police captain. We're also talking to Chief William Finney, head of the St. Paul Police Department. Well, the hard numbers came from St. Paul this week, and of course it simply highlighted the growing local and national concern over racial profiling. We would like to have your input into this conversation. It's 1-800-242-2828. What do you make of the numbers from St. Paul? Do you think that we need to have legislation mandating this sort of data collection in each Minnesota community? Or do you think it should be left up to a voluntary, a grant-seeking status? Do you think we have racial profiling in Minnesota? Maybe you have your own story. 1-800-242-2828 in the Twin Cities. It's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning. We're going to turn now to Stephen John. He's standing by with the latest from the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom.
Thank you, Catherine. Good morning. Donald Rumsfeld is on Capitol Hill this morning. The man chosen by George W. Bush to be the next defense secretary is expected to win the support of Armed Services Committee members. Rumsfeld has served as defense secretary before in the Ford administration. An American plan to reduce the violence between Israelis and Palestinians is being implemented today. Israel has eased its tight closure of Palestinian areas, and officers from both sides are touring trouble spots. Palestinian officials say talks are expected to resume in the next few days. The world has its first genetically engineered primate. Researchers have put a tiny extra bit of DNA into a baby rhesus monkey. They hope they can now introduce other genes in monkeys that could trigger a variety of human diseases in hopes of finding a way to block them at the genetic level. The research is described in the journal Science. A Northwest Airlines DC-9 jet returned safely to Minneapolis-St. Paul International Airport after an engine backfired shortly after takeoff last night. The flight was bound for Sioux Falls, South Dakota. A Northwest spokesman says the 35 passengers and four crew members were not in danger. Two parachutists are on the ground after jumping off the new 35-story Target Towers in downtown Minneapolis early this morning. One parachutist broke his leg and had to be rescued from a ledge about 10 stories up. The other landed safely on the sidewalk. The rate at which development ate up rural land doubled during the mid-1990s. According to a U.S. Department of Agriculture study, the amount of developed area in Minnesota rose 12% in the most recent stretch from 1992 to 1997. Dense fog advisory for portions of the west this morning, otherwise partly cloudy in the north and west, becoming cloudy in the southeast with a chance of light rain or freezing rain, highs in the middle 20s. Across the region at this hour, it's mostly cloudy in Mankato, 34 degrees. In War Roads, there's some snow, 7 above. It's 5 below in Baudette, and fog in the Twin Cities, 28 degrees. That's news from NPR.
Programming support is provided by the new and renewing members of Minnesota Public Radio.
Hi, Flynn Rossetto Casper. This week we're taking a look at the politics of wine consumption. Who drinks it and why? Cheesemonger Steve Jenkins takes on cultured butters, and the Stearns are eating Hawaiian in San Diego. Be sure to join us this week on The Splendid Table, Saturday at 1 and Sunday at 6 a.m. on Minnesota Public Radio, KNOW-FM 91.1.
I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning. Okay, this is it, the big day. It's Thursday. Where are you going to be at 6:45 p.m. tonight? Ah, that's right. You're going to be in your chair at the Fitzgerald Theater for another edition of Talking Volumes. That's the book club we operate with the Star Tribune and the Loft Literary Center. Tonight is going to be... it's going to be a gas. I think that's the only technical term for it. We have Bill Holm, the author of The Heart Can Be Filled Anywhere on Earth. We've got him, a grand piano, and you at the Fitzgerald Theater. There'll be music. He'll be talking about his book. There'll be entertainment. There'll be questions from you. If you want to pre-submit a question, go to minnesotapublicradio.org. Click on the Talking Volumes icon. Otherwise, we'll see you tonight, 6:45 p.m. Remember, it's free. All right. Now, in the 10 o'clock hour of Mid-Morning this morning, we'll be talking about the language of grief. You want to stick around for that conversation. And, of course, we want you to continue with us for this conversation. We're talking about racial profiling. A lot of hard numbers came out of St. Paul this week. It's the first time this sort of data has been collected, a look at 32,000 traffic stops. And one of the preliminary conclusions you can come to that it is more likely for a black person to be stopped than a white. And a lot of observers, however, are saying, hold on, there's a lot more analysis and discussion that needs to go on here. We're talking today to Rich Stanek. He's the Republican state representative from Maple Grove. He's a Minneapolis police captain. He has legislation proposing training policies and some funding for data collection concerning racial profiling. We're also talking to Chief William Finney, head of the St. Paul Police Department, about those numbers that came out of his department. We'd like to be talking to you. It's 1-800-242-2828. In the Twin Cities, 651-227-6000. Before we go to those calls, a quick question for both of you. First, Representative Stanek, talk for a minute about the training aspect. that's in your legislation?
Yeah, my legislation will call for training of police officers both before they're ever licensed by this state, meaning when they're going through law enforcement school, and secondly, provide training for officers who are already licensed, like myself and Chief Finney. There's about 8,700 police officers in Minnesota, and I want to encourage them to receive training in anti-racial profiling.
How do you do that? How do you train someone not to do racial profiling?
Well, really, you confront them with their biases. You lay the biases right out on the table, and you talk to them about what the issues are in the community in which they police and what's important to that community.
Chief Finney, I want to talk to you for a minute. You know, the chief of police in Rochester said that no one thinks that racial profiling should happen, but the argument is whether or not it is happening. How do the numbers from St. Paul advance that discussion?
Well, I think that if you look at just the raw numbers, it says, well, we must be profiling because we have such a high number of African Americans and other people of color in the mix being encountered with the police. It's difficult to begin to encounter based upon when you address the numbers. All I can do is look at the practice of my officers and practices that I've seen over the years where I've seen with individual officers practices of racism. I've seen that. I've seen where we have officers who operate on a personal private agenda of an ism, a racism or a sexism. I insist that the only ism that they practice is professionalism. Now, I'm in a position to do something about an officer I see acting out in the performance contrary to the direction of the department. And so we do that. I don't think systemically inside of the St. Paul Police Department we have an issue. But it's important for all of us to remember, we hire people that come to become police officers who are the sum total of their experiences and their orientation when they are growing up. The only thing that I can do as a police executive is insist that they do not practice any biases on the job and insist that they adhere as a professional to the professional ethics of impartiality and equity in the delivery of that service.
You had six officers whose practices you found troubling. Three of them were reassigned. Doesn't that tell us that maybe some people were practicing racial profiling?
Oh, I agree. I agree. They were certainly practicing something that was they couldn't defend when they talked to the chief. And so the only thing I can do to people like that is to make them non-police, ex-police, or take them out of a position where they have direct contact with citizens.
What was it like to reassign them?
Easy. you just reassign them and you put them in a position where they get the idea and they go out and they practice differently. I have to say that all of them have responded very favorably. They're no longer practicing that.
We're going to go to Stephen in Plymouth. Stephen, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning. I'd like my police to pull over people that are committing the crimes. Part of this study that doesn't show any, the part of this study doesn't show of the people that are pulled over how many are actually convicted. I don't care what color they are. When a cop pulls somebody over, I want to make sure that he's pulling over the people that are, in his best judgment, I want him to be pulling over the people that are being convicted. I want his pullover ratio pulling over the right people. It doesn't matter what color they are. Caller before said that, you know, someone that may dress like a gang member but isn't a gang member, well, isn't that his responsibility? Or isn't that the, you know, I don't dress like the hoodlum, so people don't have the impression of treating me like a hoodlum. I think that, you know,
What's your question, Stephen?
I guess more of a statement. I guess I'm saying I'd like the cops to pull over the people that are committing the crimes, and I don't see in this study showing the conviction rate of the people that are pulled over. If there's a
okay.
Well, you know, it's a slippery slope when you start pulling over people for what they look like rather than their behavior. Well, I agree with you. You pull people based upon their behavior. If they're speeding, you stop them for speeding. If you decide that anybody who looks like, for lack of a better term, a grubby person, that you're going to tag every one of those, then you're going a step further. If you wouldn't tag a person in a business suit for speeding the same way as you do for the grubby person, then you're practicing a bias.
He wanted to know what the conviction rate was for whites and blacks.
Does that
question apply in traffic stops?
No, it wouldn't. I would think that you can take a look at the conviction rate by who's getting sent to prison. except that conviction rate and incarceration rate are a different thing again. People that are convicted of the same offenses, there's a disparity in who gets sent to jail. And that's one of the things we can show.
We're going to go to Julie in Minneapolis. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
Good morning.
Hi.
In response to the comments about ticketing just now, or conviction rates, it does seem that blacks are much more likely to be ticketed than whites. The Chief Finney had given statistics of, I think, 70-some percent of whites are actually pulled over, whites account for 70% of those who are pulled over and 50-some percent of those who are ticketed, whereas blacks accounted for around 25% of those who are pulled over and 24% of those who are ticketed. So it does seem likely that if they're pulled over, they are more likely to be, you know, convicted as far as being given a ticket. But my main question was this. There was a comment made by Chief Finney that it may be that racism in the community is a large factor in more blacks being stopped. And he used the example of a person who calls and says, well, there are four black guys, you know, outside, and I'm afraid they're going to rape or kill someone. It was an example, sort of like that. And my question is, shouldn't we have different criteria for when the police are going to respond? I mean, if a black person simply standing is enough to send a squad car out, then I think that's a problem. I think we need to be looking at behavior. And so if the dispatchers, I think maybe it's incumbent upon them to say, are they doing something? You know, is there some kind of behavior you're concerned about? And if it's just simply standing around, then I don't think a squad car should be sent out.
Okay. Julie, let's let Representative Stanek respond.
Well, Julie, you raise a good point, but quite honestly, when the public calls their police, a 911, and say that there's a problem, the police are going to come. It's not our job to ask questions up front and decipher whether or not we should respond to a call based on what information you give us. I don't think that you or the other citizens of the state would expect that. So law enforcement's going to come out to the call. What happens from that point on is what this issue is all about.
We're going to go to Wes in Bloomington. Wes?
Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
Listen, as an African-American who has lived and worked in 32 different states in these United States, I got to tell you, Minnesota does not have a problem with racial profiling at all. And that, in my opinion, where I live, I'm a computer programmer, so I get to go all over the place. And I try to get involved into the community. And here I volunteer my services with Little Brothers Friends of the Elderly. And I got to tell you, if I did this in a city like Houston or Philadelphia, I could not dress the way I dress here.
What do you mean?
When you're black in certain cities in this country, you have to look a certain way to scare off the racist cops. You have to dress up, basically. Not here. I work out with friends who are a member of the Minneapolis Police Force. We get along just great. I tell you, this is heaven. The state of Minnesota does not know what racial profiling is until you've gone someplace else.
Now, Wes, what if it's simply not as egregious here as it is elsewhere?
Well, that could very well be, but I don't, you know,
I think in Alan Page, former U.S. Attorney Todd Jones, I mean, there's a long list of sophisticated thinkers who will tell you they think it does happen here.
Well, I would say it does, but I tell you on the scale, when you look at other cities and other states, I know that there are isolated situations here in the state of Minnesota, but that is nothing compared to what you will see in other states.
Okay.
As far as I'm concerned.
Wes, I thank you for your call.
You're welcome.
We need to go to Tony in Minneapolis. Tony. Welcome to Mid-Morning.
So, I have relatives on the St. Paul Police Force. My uncle was a patrol officer downtown St. Paul. He was assigned. He was on the east side, and he was assigned to downtown. He himself told me there's racism on the force within officers themselves. And plus, me, myself, I'm a working man. I have been sitting in my car, getting ready to go to work, and the police officers drive by and shine a big spotlight in my face. And if I happen to look funny and give them an awkward look like, why are you doing this? They back up and say, well, is there a problem? You know, I say no. And then they take off. I mean, it's attitudes like that. The chief doesn't want to admit it. Yes, there's racism. I'm a black man and said, yes, there's racism.
Okay.
Right. I don't, you know, if there is those racial incidents, then they should be reported and let's deal with it. I mean, after a while, it becomes anecdotal. You heard it from your uncle who was a police officer in St. Paul who got moved from the east side to downtown. I mean, I would think that your uncle, whoever that is, would have had the professional responsibility to report that.
We're talking about racial profiling this morning with Chief William Finney, head of the St. Paul Police Department. Also talking to Rich Stanek, a Republican state representative from Maple Grove and a Minneapolis police captain. Lots of questions stemming from both the release this week of data from St. Paul, looking at 32,000 traffic stops, showing that black motorists are more likely to be stopped and searched than white motorists. Also, we have a proposal coming from Rich Stanek proposing an anti-racial profiling, a mandatory policy, training. There's also a big question here about data collection. Do you think that we need to have mandated data collection? Does the state need to say, collect this data, we will try and analyze it? Well, who pays for that collection then? Or would you rather see it on a voluntary basis? We'd like to know what you think. It's 1-800-242-2828. And then, of course, there is that question of, do we have racial profiling in this state? It's 651-227-6000, 651-227-6000. Let's go to Margaret in Minneapolis. Margaret, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I was, I'm a white person, and I was a little naive about the whole racial profiling issue until about a year ago I started working, the privilege to work with a black man from another country who was applying for political asylum. And one day he asked me a question. He said, Margaret, is it okay for the police officers to frisk me whenever they stop me? And I said, why are they stopping you? He said, well, they never give me a ticket, but they just stop me, and sometimes they ask me to frisk if they can frisk me, and he always says yes. And sometimes he's been frisked very intimately in a way that he felt was inappropriate and would be repeatedly asked questions about, do you have any drugs? Are you sure you don't have any drugs? And it turned out he'd been stopped and frisked four times in the period of 4 months. He happens because he's new to this country. He doesn't have a lot of money. He lives in a poor area of Minneapolis, but never once was he cited. This man is an engineer and is making his way in this country as an engineer, never committed any crimes in his country or my country, and now I'm convinced that there is racial profiling. His only offense, I guess, was driving a car while black. That's the only reason he was pulled over.
Margaret, mm-hmm. So what do you think needs to happen?
I think that there needs to be, first of all, I would question whether or not the officers who pulled them over really did write down all of those times that they're pulling over. So even if you're doing a study like this, I would wonder whether all of the information, all of the times that this gentleman happened to be pulled over were even marked down. I mean, because if they're just pulling him over, frisking him and letting him go and never citing him, are they writing this down? Is there any record, a real record of all of the racial profiling that's going on? And then secondly, you know, someone, I think the chief just asked, well, they should complain, you know, this cousin or nephew of someone who was on the police force should come forward. That's a very difficult thing to do, even for a police officer within the police force to come forward and say, yes, there's you know, there's some racial attitudes here. There can be ramifications and retaliation for that. So it's difficult for someone in a position of relative authority to come forward and say something like that, much less someone who's a recent immigrant
okay.
to come forward.
Margaret, I thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well, Margaret, that's what my legislation will do. I mean, it provides a structure in place for training, policy. It allows for collection of data, gives the police chiefs and sheriffs an opportunity to analyze that data and report it back to their agencies and their communities. It also sets in place a number of parameters or identifiers by which the data should be collected, like age and race and ethnicity and time of stop and location of stop, and then goes back and has some checking being done on the data to make sure it is valid.
In other words, so her concern is that someone won't record every stop they make, and you want sort of surprise checks to see that that's happening?
Correct. I think there needs to be some validity of the data. And I think even Chief Finney, you found in the statistics you released, were a number of traffic stops or data that was thrown out or discounted because incorrect.
Yes. The data we have thrown out is because the dispatcher recorded it incorrectly when they received it. But every officer understands in St. Paul that to not identify where you stopped the person, who you are, and what you did, you know, if it's a black male and you searched or not, you're supposed to give that information up and whether or not you tagged. If they do those stops and they don't report it, then that's an insubordination. And that's how I look at it. It's playing with fire. That is an order from the Office of the Chief that you would do that. You report every traffic stop. And so, because they know we're collecting this data, and, you know, to skew it or to play games with it is sometimes skews how the data comes out, and it's a disservice to what it is we're trying to accomplish.
Let's go to Mickey in Minneapolis. Mickey, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
Good. You're having a great show today.
Thank you.
Yes. I wanted to comment because I have businesses in South Minneapolis, North Minneapolis, and St. Paul. And I think I can say without question that the racial profiling in the city of St. Paul is far less severe than the racial profiling in the city of Minneapolis. Everybody I know feels that way. To a man, the city of Minneapolis has racial profiling down to its ground troops who carry out the orders, and it becomes very, very difficult in the city of Minneapolis to operate as a black person. In the city of St. Paul, luckily, police do use some type of standards before they involve themselves with the community.
Now, Mickey, I'm sure that some folks would come back with the answer of, well, this sounds pretty anecdotal. I want to know how you feel about mandatory data collection.
Well, I think the data that we're looking at today is pretty bogus and meaningless.
How so?
I mean, well, obviously the police are not going to report the stops that are completely out of order or out of bounds. Mr. Finney has made a few comments. Well, why aren't people that are having unfair treatment or having their civil rights violated reporting this to the police or to the proper authorities? Every black person in the city would be in a line around every city hall block of their city waiting to report the unlimited and constant barrage of civil rights violations. The black people would never be able to go to work or do anything. They'd be all in line waiting to report the violations. It's ridiculous. There are violations that are constantly happening every day. You can't report those. There's nothing that can be done about that. The system has to change from the inside, from the very bottom to the top. Then maybe we'll see some relief.
Okay. Representative Stanek.
Two things. One, Minneapolis police last year responded to 500,000 calls for service to its citizens. 500,000. They received 138 complaints about the police officer's conduct. That says something, okay? Law enforcement officers are professional. Those that are not professional, those that violate the trust that's put in them by the citizens that they work for and their law enforcement agencies are dealt with. Secondly, I think his point goes to the fact that, you know, whether racial profiling occurs or not occurs, that perception's out there, and it's law enforcement's job to take a look at it, analyze the data, collect it, report it back, provide training and policy.
We're going to go to Terry in Coon Rapids. Terry, welcome to Mid-Morning.
Yes, good morning. Mm-hmm. I just have a statement to make. I'm in the car here on my cell phone. And I'm very interested in the topic, specifically because a short while ago I was privileged to coach at a training for the St. Paul Police Department and became concerned when, and I think because I was a coach, I was probably more approachable than the trainers during breaks and lunches and so forth. And the training included Hmong and Hispanic and African-American police officers in the St. Paul Police Department that ended up getting into a conversation with me, in fact, several conversations that indicated strongly that there was very strong tension within the police department, racial tension within the police department. And I guess my concern is if this is true and has this come to your attention, should not the police department be, you know, working at dealing with its issues on the inside, and then maybe that will help begin, you know, to resolve the external issues. And that's all I'm going to say, and I'll hang up and listen.
All right. Thanks, Terry.
Strong racial tension within the police department. I guess I would disagree. I mean, there has been tension at times between people that work with each other, and sometimes it has gotten to be a racial issue. Strong? I don't know. Is it debilitating? I don't think so. So I guess I would disagree with those two adjectives, you know, saying that. But you got a snapshot of the department that probably wouldn't be shown to a police chief. But my managers don't indicate that there's strong racial tension within amongst the members. There has been an occasional one, and there have been those issues.
We're going to go to James in Minnetonka. James, welcome to Mid-Morning. Hi, James.
Hello.
Hi.
Okay. I had a question, and I was just wondering, is there ever a scenario where racial profiling could be beneficial? Could it help solve the problem? Take a scenario such as a black neighborhood and a crime's committed early in the morning by a white person, and about 2 a.m. they see another white person driving through, and they pull that person over specifically because he's white. There's
okay.
a good
James,
chance.
We're running out of time. Let's see what Representative Stanek says.
Yeah, there's no case in which racial profiling is justified. Let me be perfectly clear about that. But there is criminal profiling, and that's based on the behavior of an individual, which would lead law enforcement to believe that he or she has committed a crime. And so criminal profiling, that's okay. That's an accepted law enforcement practice. Racial profiling, absolutely not.
In the time that we have remaining, first I'm going to start with you, Chief Finney.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to collect any more data, and what's going to happen with the numbers you have collected?
Our data is ongoing. We're continuing to collect. So for all those that are members of the St. Paul Police Department, you continue the practice you've been continuing until we tell you not to. So we're going to continue to do that. We're going to continue to assess that. But I am very interested in what comes out of the legislature. If it's not a mandated situation for police departments, or if other police departments don't want to do this, then why should St. Paul?
Okay, and quickly, what should we be looking out for at the legislature around this issue?
Well, I think you're going to see this legislation move forward. I hope that, and again, I'm going to compliment Chief Finney and Chief Olson from Minneapolis and St. Paul for being leaders in law enforcement and taking this issue head on. This bill will receive committee hearings, will move on down. I assume that the governor's office will support it when it lands on his desk for signature.
But you don't know that.
I don't know. That hasn't been any indication from the governor what he will or will not support in the area of racial profiling.
Okay. We have run out of time. I want to thank you both for being here. Rich Stanek, thank you.
Thank you.
Rich Stanek, a Republican state representative from Maple Grove, and he's a Minneapolis police captain. And Chief Finney, thanks for being here.
Thank you. I always enjoy the show, Catherine.
Thanks. Chief William Finney, head of the St. Paul Police Department. I'm Catherine Lanfer. You're listening to Mid-Morning here on Minnesota Public Radio.
Everybody's talking volumes, and now you can get in on the fun. Minnesota Public Radio's new regional book club features a different extraordinary writer every month. And when you join NPR,